sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Pro-Life America Podcast.
Yes, we're very happy to have you with us today. I think we got a really interesting show lined up for today, something that I think is very important, and it relates to our thing that we just said, pro-life without compromise, without exception, without apology.
Most importantly, without apology. It seems like everything today is about apologizing for something.
Don't apologize ever for being in defense of the unborn. Never.
Exactly. So we have a show suggestion here from one of our listeners. Tom sent in this message. He says, hi, big fan of your podcast. Thank you so much, Tom. We love to hear that. And he says, maybe you can talk about ethical ways to respond to life-threatening pregnancies. Thank you.
This, like I said, relates to our little open there, no compromise, no exception, no apology. Mm-hmm. And this is the most difficult issue that comes up. They say, well, a woman has got a condition that would cause her to die. Are you going to say she has to die in order to preserve the life of the unborn child? Several things need to be brought up here. First off, the number of situations that occur today with modern medicine in which a woman's pregnancy threatens her life are very close to zero.
Yeah, they're very small.
Very rare. And furthermore, there is no condition that a woman can suffer from that she's cured by having an abortion. Abortion doesn't cure anything. Mm-hmm. It's not a treatment for anything. But the pro-aborts will twist this around to make it look like 90% of the women who have abortions are having them because they were either raped or they were the victim of incest or the pregnancy threatens their life. And the reality is that most studies show somewhere between 1% and 3% of all abortions occur as a result of all of those things, not just any one individual one, but all of them.
Well, they use these extreme cases, this little small window of cases, the 2%, to try to justify and open the door for the other 95%, 97% of them, because they know that there's no really good argument or justification for those. So all they have is extreme cases.
Right. First off, before we go further on that score, let's talk about the possibility that, we've got this extraordinarily rare case that the pregnancy is causing a threat to the woman's life. Our position is not that, and this is something that the pro-aborts have always tried to paint us, they will say, well, you're saying that the baby's life is more important than the mother's life. That's not our position.
No, our position is that they are both equal.
They're equal. And in this extraordinarily rare case, if it ever does come up, and I've had board-certified OBGYNs tell me that this never occurs, but let's just say that it did, then what's the solution to that? And the solution is that the doctor should be allowed to do anything that's necessary to save the woman's life, but he must also attempt to save the baby's life. The life of both of them is equal. If in the process of saving one of their lives, the other one dies, that has to be seen as a regrettable but lawful outcome. But the fact is, it almost never happens. And if in those one in a trillion cases that it might happen, again, the physician should be allowed to do anything necessary to save the life of both of them.
Exactly.
But under no conditions, and this is the important thing, under no conditions should he be taking any type of action, medical procedure or whatever, whose intent is to cause the life of one or the other of them.
Exactly.
The issue here is what does he intend to happen? And the intent must always be to save both of them.
Well, the intent of medicine should always be to help, to cure, to treat.
Right.
And abortion is none of those things.
None of those
abortion
things.
Is the deliberate taking of human life.
Right.
End of story.
That's all it is. Let me draw an analogy here.
Okay.
I want you to think about Siamese twins or conjoined twins. And let's say that a doctor concluded, and by the way, before we continue with this analogy, let's make the point. Siamese twins are two separate people. They may be joined, but they're two individual human beings, right?
Exactly.
Just like an unborn child and a mom. And let's say that the doctor said, we could save one of these Siamese twins by intentionally killing the other one. There's not a doctor on earth that would do that. There's no medical ethics that would justify someone going in and intentionally killing one of the Siamese twins in order to save the other one.
Right.
They might try to save both of them.
As they should.
That's their job. And one of them might die in that process if they're separating them. Mm-hmm. But they would never intentionally kill one Siamese twin to save the other one. So again, the issue is always, what did the actor intend to happen as opposed to what might have actually happened? A legitimate physician would never say, I will intentionally take the life of the unborn child to save the mother, any more than you'd say, I'd intentionally take the life of the mother to save the unborn child. Mm-hmm. They're equally important and their right to life is equal.
Well, this kind of ties into their argument of what happens if the child has a disability, because this goes behind the motivations of the medical profession. The reality is, when we use abortion as a shortcut for disabilities, what incentive do we think that the medical community has to find new treatments, find cures for things like Down syndrome?
Right.
Was it Finland?
Yeah, Finland. They're now saying they have eradicated Down syndrome.
Yeah, and they haven't eradicated Down syndrome using a new cure or using science. It was because they killed them via abortion.
Yeah, they killed them all. So they don't have any Down syndrome children walking in the streets in Finland because they killed them all. Well, that's not a solution.
No. In the end of the day, it ties down to money.
Right.
Because abortion is the cheaper solution than spending all this money into medical research.
Well, one thing that's tied into all of this when you start getting into these issues is, and I've had people ask me this over the years, can you be pro-life and support certain exceptions, rape, incest, life of the mother, fetal deformity, whatever? Mm-hmm. And the simple answer is no, you cannot be. Mm-hmm. Because when you say that under certain circumstances, it is okay to intentionally kill this child in order to accomplish this social goal, then you're no different than the parole boards. It's just a matter of where you draw the line.
Yeah.
They say some of them can be killed. They've never advocated that every pregnant woman in America should be required to have an abortion.
Exactly.
They're just saying that she should be able to select the ones that should be aborted. So when you say, I think babies that were conceived in rape, it's okay if the woman has an abortion, you need to paraphrase that.
Yeah.
What you really need to say is, I think it's okay to kill babies that were conceived in rape, but I'm pro-life. Well, reconcile that for me. The analogy that I've often made on this, and in all my writings I've said this, it'd be like a guy saying back in the 1860s, well, I'm opposed to slavery, but if somebody wants to own a few, under certain circumstances, if the guy just can't get his farm going or his plantation going unless he has some slaves, then maybe in those certain hard cases it would be okay. Well, you can't claim then that you're an abolitionist.
No, because you support certain situations for slavery.
Right.
Yeah.
The same thing is true here. When you say you're pro-life with exceptions, what you're really saying is you're pro-choice with limits. And that's
exactly, that's
a totally different situation.
That is the only intellectually honest answer to that. And, you know, it was interesting that you mentioned that because in 2004, the former Planned Parenthood president before Cecile Richards, her name was Gloria Felt, and she was on KABC radio in L.A., and she said this about pro-lifers. If you press them, they will almost always say that they believe in any case that the life of the woman, if a woman's life is at stake, should take precedent. So they're already, to some degree, pro-choice. They just don't know it.
Right. And she's exactly right. She hit the nail on the head. She described the pro-life with exceptions policy right there.
Yeah.
So even the pro-aborts recognize the inconsistency and the hypocrisy of this. Now, there's another thing I think we ought to bring up on the case that Tom had asked about initially.
Life-threatening pregnancies.
Life-threatening pregnancies. I did some research on this many, many years ago. We found a law review article written by a pro-abortion attorney. And in it, she said that if the time ever came that abortion was made illegal, except in one case, and that is when the pregnancy threatens the woman's life, she said, if that was the only exception they had, she said, our legal argument would be that if a woman comes into an abortion clinic and says, if I can't have an abortion, I'll commit suicide, that qualifies as a threat to her life.
Yeah.
And they're right. It does.
Yeah.
Once you take that exception, they're going to turn it into no exceptions.
Exactly.
And it's just like the situation with abortions for rape. There have been legislative proposals in the country where you had a state that the legislature was of a mind that, yeah, we'll outlaw abortion except for rape, incest, life of the mother, and so forth. And on the rape situation, one of the things that some of these state legislatures, and I worked with one of them one time on this, The state legislator did not want the exception for rape, but he saw that this is what his
he was outvoted
colleagues were going to do.
Yeah.
And he proposed, okay, if we're going to have an exception for rape, it can only be used in situations where the woman files charges in the rape. She has to be willing to come forward and say, yes, I was raped. I want to have this abortion.
Yeah.
And I'm going to file charges. Here's what I know. Here's the guy that did it, or here's evidence of who it is. And if you find him, I'll press charges. But she's got to be willing to press charges if she was truly raped.
I'm going to guess that that didn't go over too well with
the
his colleagues.
The pro-aborts went berserk over this.
Yeah.
You know, I often say, you've heard me say this a million times, these people don't care about women.
Mm-mm.
They use difficult situations. They're hyenas. They use difficult situations in women's lives to justify selling abortions.
That's, it always boils down to money. That is what they care about.
It always comes down to that. But let me point something else out to you on this particular case, on this legislation that this guy was proposing that said the woman must be willing to file charges over the rape or she can't have the abortion.
Yeah.
If you were to go to police departments that have sexual assault units and you were to say, what could be the best thing that could ever be done to deal with the issue of sexual assault and rape? They will tell you without exception for women to come forward. Most women don't.
Yeah.
That's what protects the rapist.
Mm-hmm.
So the sexual assault people would tell you, if women would just come forward, that would be the single greatest thing that we could have toward reducing the incidence of rape and sexual assault.
Yeah.
And here's legislation being proposed that would do that. And guess who opposed it? So don't tell
the
me
the people who claim they care about women.
Don't tell me they care about women. They're liars. They care about abortion. That's all that matters.
And eugenics. This argument about abortion for disabled babies, let's make no mistake about this. It's eugenics.
Oh, sure
it is a soft push for eugenics to try to make this bastardization of compassion argument. But really, once you open that door, you'll see where it leads to. We have quotes here from a lot of people who claim to be bioethicists, right?
Right.
Or people who study ethics and science. Here's one. At a 1986 symposium called Prenatal Diagnosis and Its Impact on Society, Dr. James Sorensen, a professor of sociomedical sciences at Boston University, observed that, quote, American opinion is rapidly moving towards the position where parents who have an abnormal child may be considered irresponsible.
Right. And we've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a show about this years ago on Live Talk.
Exactly.
And we had women say to us that when they have a Down syndrome child that they love dearly, wouldn't take $1 billion for this child. But when they introduce them to new people, they will very often ask this mother, didn't you know when you were pregnant that this child had problems?
Exactly.
Now what are they saying to that mother?
Basically, how dare you give birth to a child with issues?
Right. And we're now seeing this over and over again, where people, like he said, women who have give birth to a child with problems will be considered irresponsible.
Yeah, and Peter Singer is another case of this. He's a professor of bioethics at Princeton University, and he has said numerous things, including that he doesn't want his tax dollars paying to treat disabled babies, which is basically a push for the government saying, you have a disabled baby, there's no aid for you. This
We're not
is punishment.
Paying any medical bills. We're not putting this child on Medicaid. If you can afford to take care of him, fine. If you can't, he dies. That's the end of it. And, you know, the thing that people need to understand about this, too, is that among these pro-aborts that take this position, there is a very bizarre consistency in their message, and that's this. And Peter Singer is a good example of this. He's written books with other people advocating this. And he's saying, look, if we're going to say that a woman can abort a child because that child has Down syndrome, why can't we kill a one-year-old that has Down syndrome?
Exactly.
And Peter Singer has actually called for parents to have a certain length of time after birth to decide whether they want to keep this child or bring the child in to be euthanized.
And the
he
book,
has actually called for this.
Yeah, and the book Should the Baby Live, he says, his colleague, and I suggested that a period of 28 days after birth might be allowed before an infant is accepted as having the same right to life as others. And he's not the only one.
Oh, there's a bunch of them.
Dr. Francis Crick, no newborn infant should be declared human until it has passed certain tests regarding its genetic endowment. And if it fails these tests, it forfeits the right to life.
Right. This is the problem that you get into when you open up this can of worms of exceptions.
Yeah.
This is all tied to the issue of exceptions. And I really appreciate Tom, because I know he speaks for a lot of people out there that are wondering, a lot of pro-lifers, how do you respond to this? The pro-aborts try to put you in a corner and make you appear heartless. back when there was debates on abortion, and I used to do them basically weekly, one of the things that I would always do with these pro-choice people, they bring up this issue of exceptions, and we'd have this discussion
back and
like
forth, toe-to-toe.
Finally, I'd say, listen, I'll tell you what, let's do. Let me ask you a question. I'm not proposing this, but I'll just ask you this as a hypothetical. Let's say that the pro-life movement got together and said, look, we don't like this, but we'll accept exceptions for children with fetal anomalies, mm-hmm. for women who've been raped.
Incest,
and threat to the mother's life. We'll accept those four, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Now, if we do that, which is the issue you brought up here, would you be willing to say, then it will be okay then to legally prohibit all abortions for anything other than those four reasons? And they start with what I used to call the motorboat. They go, bah, 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 bah. And you got to hold their feet to the fire because they're never going to say that. The fact is they don't care about those four reasons and they don't care about those women mm-hmm. or those families that are facing these things.
No.
They're moral hyenas. Mm-hmm. They're using the tragedy in this woman's life to justify all the money they make from the other reasons. I used to ask them, I said, let's just say that you're concerned about these four reasons. Mm-hmm. And you think I'm heartless because I oppose. Okay, let's say that I am, mm-hmm. and I have a change of heart, and now I'm going to agree. Would you then agree that women who just come into an abortion clinic and say, I don't want to have an abortion, or they don't even give a reason. Mm-hmm. I'm just here for my abortion, and you don't question them for the reason. Are you willing to give up all of those if we agree to these?
And the answer is no.
It's always no. And that's the problem that you have when you start going down this trail.
Yeah.
Of singling out some babies for execution.
Well, and I think you put this really well in Answers. And this relates to the babies with disabilities. What you say is, one of the most incredible aspects of the abortion lobby's approach to the disabled is that they try to sell it as compassionate. But what is often overlooked in all this is the fact that the quote-quote choice they offer is not between a life with handicaps or one without, but between a life with handicaps or no life at all. When apologists call that compassion, let's recognize for whom this compassion is being shown. Make no mistake, abortions on the disabled are done for us, not them.
That's right. They're done so that we don't have to see them. And I know that sounds harsh and cold, but that's exactly what the situation is. And we don't have to pay for them. Even some people who might otherwise call themselves Christians or conservatives or whatever will tell you that they don't like the idea of their tax dollars being used to pay for the care of these children that could have been compassionately eliminated in the womb. It's a complete bastardization of the word compassion. And that's all it is.
And you're seeing a wave of people pushing for an increase in genetic testing of babies inside the womb, despite the fact that these tests can often come back incorrect. But my mom and I were just talking about this the other day, and when she was pregnant with me, she was in her 40s, and my dad was right there along with her, which if you know anything about the science behind Down syndrome, when the parents are older, the chances of having Down syndrome are increased, especially if the father is also older. And they wanted to do genetic testing with me. And my mom kept pushing it about it and asking if there was going to be any risk to me. And they're like, well, I mean, yeah, it can happen. But my mom just straight up told them, she said, I'm not having any genetic testing because that is not going to affect the outcome of my pregnancy.
Right. It's not going to change any decision.
Just drop it.
And as you know, years ago, my wife and I had a child that died. And she was born with a condition called Meckel-Gruber syndrome. Mm-hmm. Well, when my wife was pregnant with her, they detected a problem, and they thought it was something called Turner syndrome, which is very similar to Meckel-Gruber. Now, Turner's is always females. Only females get Turner syndrome. And it has some circumstances. They're always short in stature. Yeah. They have some other health issues. They're always sterile. They can't have babies. But I've talked to board-certified physicians, mm-hmm. women who have Turner syndrome. Mm-hmm. So they're perfectly fine, other than a few limitations that they have. And when this geneticist here in Denton said, we've determined that your child has Turner syndrome. Mm-hmm. He said, would you like for us to help you arrange a termination?
Ooh.
It was the wrong thing to say. And he figured that out very quickly. And I hope that he learned from that, not to bring this up again, because the next father might not be as restrained as I was.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just saw red when he said that. Now, it turns out that our daughter had Meckel-Gruber syndrome, which is extraordinarily rare. It's always females. And it's always fatal. Mm-hmm. Nobody survived, so she died just a few days later. And I've had people say to me, well, don't you think it would have been more compassionate to have gone ahead and aborted her rather than let her live for a couple of days and then die? I said, first off, I wouldn't take any amount of money for the time that we did have with her. It was very short. But secondly, I don't have to live now with the guilt of knowing that I killed my own baby.
Exactly.
So no, it's not compassionate. We deal with the situations that are placed in front of us, but we don't deal with them by executing people.
Yeah.
And again, this all goes back to the same issue, and that is you just cannot allow exceptions.
Well, and to some degree, these kind of conversations about abortion in case of disabled babies and even abortion in the cases of rape and incest, the conversation always seems to make the children who are born out of these situations, like the children of rape and incest and the children who are disabled, as less than human.
Right.
If you look at the way they talk about them as if they're subhuman.
Yeah, that's right.
And it is extremely insulting. You're telling them your life does not have value because you don't meet my standards.
Well, you know, there's a study's been done on this subject. In America, it's estimated that approximately between 3 and 5% of all babies born in America, not the ones aborted, but of all babies born in America, 3 to 5% of them were created in rape. Mm-hmm. Now, if I showed you a picture of a daycare center with 100 kids out on the playground, if there's 100 kids out there, statistically, at least three of them and maybe five of them were created through rape. If I showed you that picture and said, okay, pick out the ones that were created through rape, could you do that?
No, it is impossible.
Why is that, Sarah?
Because they are just as human and just as entitled to the right to life as the rest of us.
And what if somebody said, I happen to know one of those kids out there on that playground that was of the three to five that were conceived in rape. I happen to know one that one of them was. And I went out there and shot him. Would we say, we're not going to charge you with murder because you shot somebody that shouldn't have been here to begin with?
Yeah, he was a child of rape, so right. It's so okay.
He's okay. And nobody would do that.
No, of course not.
Everybody would say how outrageous that is. But that's what we're saying here. And that's what you're saying when you start taking these exceptions.
They're no less human than the rest of us. And I think part of where this happens is we confuse our feelings about rape and incest with the children of rape and incest.
Right.
And they're two very different things.
Two entirely different things. We've had women on the old Life Talk show that said that the rape was a horrible situation that she wouldn't wish on anybody.
Yeah.
But the only good thing that came out of it was the child that they have.
Well,
and I've also had women tell me that had abortions that'll say, today, I can live with the rape. I can't live with the abortion.
Yeah.
Because what happened was somebody inflicted violence on me.
And then she passed that violence
on. And then
on.
I inflicted violence on my own child.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it didn't unrape me. I was still raped.
Yeah.
All
abortion
I had
doesn't
now
undo
was,
what has already happened.
I went from a rape victim to a rape victim with a dead child.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure how I profited from that process. And you can meet people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Good, funny, intelligent people that were conceived in rape, that learned that they were conceived in rape.
Yeah.
So this whole argument about any exceptions, whatever the exception may be, and we mentioned the fetal deformity and how often it is, and it is very often, that a woman will be given a diagnosis of her baby with problems, and then the baby's born and doesn't have any problems.
It came out just fine.
Right. We need to understand something that it's fundamental, and that is we are not God.
Yeah.
As much as we might want to be, and as much as we might think we can do a better job, that's what these people are saying. God created this child, but it was a mistake. And so I'm going to come along and correct God's mistakes for him, and we'll kill this baby.
Yeah, don't be deceived. The pro-choice side sells this as compassion. But what it really is, if you boil it down, is the belief that some people are better than others.
Yeah,
some people are more human than others.
And more deserving.
More deserving of others. So when you buy into this exceptions argument, you're supporting that. You're supporting that belief.
Yeah, you're telling them. You're right. Some of them are more deserving of protection, and so we're going to agree with you that it's okay to kill these over here.
A good point to end this off is when the Nazis set out in their mission for genocide and eugenics, they began by executing the handicapped and selling it as compassion.
That was the first people they executed was the handicapped. They rounded them up. They put them in these vans and ran the exhaust into the van and then just drove them around a little bit. Then open up the back door of the van and dump them in a grave. And they sold it as compassion. That's exactly right.
Well, we want to thank Tom for sending in this question. We really appreciate it. And if you have your own question that you want to ask about the abortion issue or how to make a pro-life argument against a pro-choice argument, anything like that, You can always go to lifedynamics.com/podcast. We have a form right there on the page where you can just type in your question and submit it.
That's what Tom did. That gave us this show. And I think this was a very important show that people needed to hear.
Oh, yeah.
And again, never apologize for defending any baby.
Mm-hmm.
Never apologize for defending a baby with Down syndrome, for a baby that was created through rape, through a baby that was created through incest. And by the way, we didn't touch on the incest thing.
No.
If there's anything that protects a man who is incesting his child, it's abortion. And we have got irrefutable proof of that. We ought to do a show on just that subject one day.
Well, and a quick note about this, child predators.
Right.
Pedophiles who prey on young girls use abortion as a safety net to protect them from being discovered by law enforcement and parents.
Right, exactly. But anyway, that's all the time we have. Until next Thursday, remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight. Why is that, Sarah?
We're here to win.
Right.
Take names, make a pro-life America.
Because winning is how this killing stops.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, guys.